Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and we're going to talk about aliens today. I can't believe that we're going to talk about aliens today. It's not what I was planning on talking about, but Pluto is about to enter the sign of Aquarius, and several years ago when Jupiter and Saturn conjoined in the early degrees of Aquarius, I did a video where I talked about the fact that Pluto was going to ingress into Aquarius and hit those degrees, same degrees, early degrees, where we saw Jupiter and Saturn ingressing and conjoining together. At that time, I did this video, which was just like for fun. And I talked about some of the mythology of Ganymede, the mythology associated with the water bearer, the cup bearer. And at that time, I talked about the fact that one of the things that wouldn't surprise me when Pluto entered the sign of Aquarius would be more talk or interest in alien life. And I didn't mean aliens as in UFOs, although it's clearly a thing right now in the news, whether they're alien crafts or spy balloons or whatever. I'm not going to try to convince you one way or the other in this video, but I mentioned that the interest in alien life, the existence of life in the cosmos beyond Earth, could be a paradigm shattering realization for all of us while Pluto was in the sign of Aquarius. And I gave some really good reasons why that could be the case, not just when Pluto ingressed, although I thought it was interesting to consider that humanity's understanding as a Jupiter-Saturn conjunction comes together in an air sign, a sign that was called humane and associated broadly with social realities, that how would our social reality change if we came to understand through some kind of discovery when Pluto entered Aquarius that there was indeed life on other planets or, you know, something like that. And I, for fun, I speculated about aliens and reports of alien abductions that dated back to previous cycles with the sign of Aquarius. And you could go back into my video archive and look at some of the stuff that I did on the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction in Aquarius and Pluto entering Aquarius. And if you go back, you'll hear, I think it was around 2020 or early 2021 that I did those videos. And I speculated and I gave some good reasons for why these are, why these kinds of themes would be symbolically appropriate for Pluto's entrance into Aquarius. We're going to revisit those today. The top three reasons that Pluto entering Aquarius right now is it's coming in through the end of March. So we're just about a month away. It's right on the cusp of entering. Mercury, of course, just entered the sign of Aquarius. Ahead of it, the Sun and Saturn are coming to join in Aquarius as I'm making this. And Pluto is about to enter Aquarius. So as that is happening, as we're on the cusp of this, people are, front page headlines on Fox News, CNN. I mean, what, if you're on the left or the right, wherever you get your news, it's a headline right now. And so today we want to look at the top three reasons that we can anticipate that this subject matter, regardless of what happens, I'm not here to make some kind of specific or concrete prediction, why this subject matter is totally appropriate for Pluto entering Aquarius and why should we may anticipate seeing a lot more of this over the next two decades, really, as Pluto goes through the sign of Aquarius over a very long period of time. So I thought this would be a fun thing to do today, and I certainly am not trying to just be alarmist and like capitalize on the news cycle and headlines, but for me, this is a really archetypally appropriate moment for taking an angle on Pluto and Aquarius that I've already taken in the past and sort of refreshing people on it because it's been a few years since I covered it from this point of view. So on that note, don't forget to like and subscribe today before we get into it. Share your comments and click the notification bell for updates if you want to know when I go live. Transcripts of any of my daily talks can be found on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. If you have a story to share for a grabbed episode, especially as Pluto enters Aquarius in the next month, use the hashtag grabbed and tell us your story. Mention the transit that you are experiencing or have experienced, and then tell us your story in the comments box in the comment section, or email us your story grabbed at nightlightastrology.com. So all of that being said, let's get into just really briefly, I want to just show you the ingress of Pluto into Aquarius on the screen and get clear on the date, kind of show you the overarching timeline that we're dealing with here. All right, so here we are as I'm making this. It's the middle of February, and you can see, Mercury is currently in the sign of Aquarius. on March 1st into the 2nd, it will be conjoining Saturn. So we have, and the sun red as I'm making this is conjoining Saturn. And then what's going to happen is, here we go. We are going to see Pluto enter, just as Saturn leaves Aquarius around the 7th of March, then a little bit later in the month, we get Pluto entering Aquarius around March 23rd. Now, I just want to speed this up. It's going to take about 2 years before Pluto fully ingresses into the sign of Aquarius, but let's just, I'm going to take everything off the wheel except for Pluto, so you can just see how long Pluto is going to spend in Aquarius. Now, watch what happens if I just animate by years. And watch the top left-hand corner. You see 2023. This is Pluto gradually working its way all the way until it hits Pisces in 2043. That's about 20 years, give or take, because we have a couple of years where it's popping back into Capricorn a little bit, then going forward. And if you do this little exercise in 2043, you'll see that Pluto will retrograde back into Aquarius for a brief period of time around 2043 before turning direct and finally going back into Pisces in 2044. So, you know, I'm just kind of, it's just a rough number. It's like 19, 20 years. That's a long time. So first of all, what I want to say is like, yes, there's headlines right now about flying things being shot down, you know, peculiar objects in the sky. A lot of people are talking about aliens. I'm not so concerned with what happens immediately, although, you know, March to June while Pluto enters Aquarius could be very interesting around the same topic of alien life or UFOs or anything like that. Because Pluto entering Aquarius is super appropriate for that topic, as we'll see in a minute. But more so, what I want is to prepare people for the fact that the next 20 years could very easily involve over 20 years is still rapid, right? For historical movement, a rapid evolution of our understanding of ourselves, of the universe, of life in the universe, including the existence of other forms of life. Now, the most dramatic would be like, okay, there's literally aliens that visit us. And that wouldn't surprise me under this transit. It really wouldn't. It wouldn't surprise me if that happened at any point in time. And I have to say that now you're going to be like, okay, now this is where he mentions, you know, he's out to lunch. For like 10 years, you know, in early in my 20s into my early 30s, I drank regularly in ayahuasca ceremonies. It is well known, well documented in the realm of ayahuasca shamanism from the indigenous curanderos all the way through, you know, average participants from all over the world, that one of the most common motifs or like visionary experiences in ayahuasca ceremonies is of the existence of other forms of life. You could call those beings angels or spirits. You could call them aliens. I couldn't possibly tell you like, you know, where they come from or what they are. But one of the experiences, for example, there's a famous artist named Pablo Amaringo who famously painted visionary landscapes from ayahuasca ceremonies. He's a, you know, an indigenous like painter, healer, and I think he's from Peru, maybe Brazil, but either way, he's from South America. He would paint in many of his paintings would involve all sorts of celestial realms, which are clearly visible. And, you know, you can experience these things in altered states. And people do so not just on ayahuasca, but many forms of psychedelics or in dreams. And having had firsthand experiences of those kinds of realities myself, not that I know what to make of them or that I have some treatise about Atlantis ready to share with you. I'm I'm really content to let all of that be deeply mysterious. And all I can tell you is that it was many of those experiences where just the reality of life beyond what can be seen or sensed with the basic five senses, at least the way that they're usually wired in everyday life. I mean, people are sensitive, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like every day, all day long. I'm a person anyway, who's just like walking around aware of like extra dimensions of, you know, reality and talking with, I mean, some people are like, I'd say my wife talks to plants it's pretty amazing how she can talk to plants. I feel like I have pretty good communication with, you know, the planets because I study astrology. In their archetypal manifestations, at any rate. I don't know if I'm literally speaking to planets or not, but regardless. So anyway, my long rambling point here is just to say that I think that no matter how literally or concretely we want to think about UFOs, aliens, life on other planets, you know, people who planted the pyramids, or like, you know, it gets real wild real fast when you start. It feels pretty soon it's like you're in the bar from Star Wars, you know, and there's like lots of crazy creatures bouncing around. And so I could, you know, I'm not here to pretend like I know what's going on, right? But what I will say is that I know that there is, as Terence McKenna said, reality is stranger than we can possibly imagine. And I believe that to be true. Had that experience beyond a place where I can't ever take back those experiences that I had with ayahuasca for a decade of my life that were jarring. They profoundly shattered my understanding of like what's real or what's possible. And so with those experiences, there just comes a sense of like, I'm not going to be surprised if anything happens. You know, like if the original architects of the pyramid suddenly landed and wanted to hold a summit about how to help the environment or like whatever, I would be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I've had a hunch there was something more than meets the eye that going on here ever since those experiences, right? And even when I was a kid, I was very open. I mean, just interested in fantasy and science fiction. And you know, the imaginal realms to me have always held a very real place in my life. And I mean like that imagination is real. It has a kind of reality. It does things, it moves things, and it has, it's a realm unto itself that is not the same as like just fiction or fantasy. It's different. And so my imaginal world has always been open to just about anything because it's been a rich place for me as a creative writer and, you know, and so forth. These altered experiences, altered states of consciousness that I experienced throughout my 20s that I wrote about also opened me beyond a shadow of a doubt to these kinds of things. However, I'm very resistant to taking things literally or trying to come to conclusions about them. The more that I try to concretely say what, try to define or nail down the experiences, whether it's in my dreams or altered states or even the mysterious interactions and synchronicities with the planets, the more concretely I try to nail those things down in a weird way, the further their living presence and their ability to have some kind of relationship with those very things. It's like it goes away if I try to nail it down too much. So I've always been super turned off from going to bookstores and like picking up some book that like outlines the whole theory of the universe and explains exactly how the pyramids were built by some ancient aliens, or I can't get into it. And you can, that's fine. I don't judge anyone who does. But for me, I've always been like, look, I just can't. The more that people try to concretely explain every last thing, the more that it starts feeling sort of paranoid and manic to me. And at least that's how it feels in my own body. So I don't want this to be any of that, but I do believe that, you know, Pluto into Aquarius is a wonderful planetary ingress that could greatly raise the interest in these kinds of subjects, the existence of other forms of life. And however we want to define that, you know, I think what we think of as alien or other in a cosmic sense is maybe it's closer at hand than we think it is. It doesn't necessarily have to be some literal civilization from out in the stars. So anyway, this long rambling introduction is mostly because I think that this topic is one that astrologers need to be careful with, and also that we all need to be careful with, because this is one of those things where you can get grabbed by it really easily. But I've frequently seen people over the years, decades of owning a yoga studio, being in the ayahuasca world, psychedelic community, new age community, astrology community, where the more literally that people get invested in the outcomes and explanations about these things, the more that there's this kind of a weird, almost like a paranoia that can set in. So yeah, I'm just careful about it. But there are good reasons to think about Pluto entering Aquarius, bringing these things up. So let's look at them. three reasons that Pluto entering Aquarius has people talking, will have people talking about aliens, whether it's now or, you know, 10 years from now. First of all, I just want to pop up on the reason that I did this is because, and I could have picked any news outlet. So if you're not I really don't watch the news, just to be disclosing that right away. But let's just go to here. If you go to CNN.com, it's not something that I look at. I'm not trying to sell you CNN or anything, but just look. U.S. officials give details on objects shot down. All three objects looked different, and those shot down over Alaska and Canada may have had payloads. And you can see Pentagon memo says object shot down over Canada was a small metallic balloon. So you can feel within the languaging a sense of the unknown, a sense of the alien, a sense of potential danger, a sense of excitement and curiosity. It's all there built into the language. And that archetypally is very resonant with Pluto's upcoming entrance into Aquarius, also with Mercury's recent entrance into Aquarius. So why? Well, the first one has to do archetypally. Now, what we're trying to do is explain why Pluto into Aquarius could bring these subjects up. So the first one has to do with the myth of Ganymede. Now, very basically, let me pull up a picture to kind of illustrate this for you. Very basically, Ganymede is this very beautiful youth, kid that Zeus sort of falls in love with and abducts, turns into eagle form and abducts Ganymede, brings him to the heavens, makes him his cupbearer, which is a very interesting position because it is the position of, it's a great honor in a sense, but it's also, it's a little bit like an enslaved position because it has the meaning of for example, you might, if you're a cupbearer, you might drink whatever's in the king's cup before the king does to make sure it's not poison, which is a kind of honor, but it's also you die before the king dies kind of thing. Ganymede is chosen as a special youth that gets to have intimate association with the gods, but that also is a very alienating thing, and there's a kind of theme of abduction involved and entrapment or enslavement. All of which involve a bird, a creature of spirit or sky, taking this individual, this youth, this beautiful chosen youth, and sort of ferrying him up to a transcendent realm. And so it's kind of an ideal position, but it's an alienating one, and possibly there's connotations of imprisonment, enslavement, abduction. It's dark, you know, but also it's also a kind of honor that the gods or this higher order of life would covet and be interested in the intimate association with a mortal. We often only think about it the other way around. We mortals should aspire to be godlike. We mortals should aspire to be better or higher. You know, we're always thinking in terms of, you know, transcendence. And this picture, one of the beautiful things about it is that the gods somehow covet, desire, honor our humanity as something that they are not or have not, that they don't have. So, but all of this, do you see how all of this on an archetypal and sort of mythological level can easily be translated into fantasies, images, a fascination with higher forms of life that want us but may abduct us, that desire us, that may find us fascinating but that could somehow enslave or entrap us. All of those things, I mean, those are the storylines of most alien movies, right? They are colonizers who are here because they're, you know, they're fascinated with us but they want to enslave us. There's a lot of that in the alien, let's call it alien fantasy. There's also, however, the fantasy of a higher form of life that could instruct us or somehow take us up to a higher realm and initiate us somehow. Ganymede is a story among many things, right? You don't ever want to read a myth too narrowly because every shade or every angle of the myth has something to say, and they don't need to be they don't need to compete, and one doesn't need to win out over the other. So yes, there's a dark side to this myth, But there's a light side too, and the light side would be the initiation into the realm of the gods, that the gods somehow bring humanity upward and steal us away from our like lower things, whether that's our understanding or our technology or whatever. So all those fantasies are wrapped up so intimately in the story of Ganymede, the water pourer, the image of Aquarius. So all of that is really fascinating. But if you sit with the myth of Ganymede and imagine Zeus and the eagle to be a metaphor for beings that are somehow different or other, or maybe higher, but higher isn't always better. So, and humanity's relationship with the humanity as the water pourer of the gods, the one that the gods somehow need to use as intermediaries through our bodies, through our mortal framework. There's something sort of disincarnate or like ethereal about the gods, and something about our mortal framework like means something to them. And these are it's not always the case that this is just one story that humans have told about gods or higher beings for a very long time. So there's lots of different ways of thinking about and relating to these images. But one way would be that the gods want something from us that they can't have without us. So we act as like almost like surrogate. It's like we're used sometimes as, I think it was Auden. Yeah, it was Auden who said we are lived by powers we pretend to understand. So all of that is something that strikes me as already very much at work in the entire history of humanity. Our awareness of it in modern times seems very like dim. Like ancients in most cultures all around the world had a active reverence for and much more conscious relationship with the powers that live us, the gods, which could also be called like sentient beings, right? You know, today we don't live with as much of a consciously developed sense of those beings and powers. Astrology is one way, one means by which we do. And so it's not surprising to me that, for example, you know, even if you set aside the literal alien stuff, it wouldn't surprise me if in the next 20 years, Pluto in Aquarius brought about a much more rapid period of popularization for astrology. Like seeing astrology become a lot more popular over the next 20 years would not surprise me at all with Pluto and Aquarius, because astrology is a kind of Aquarian experience. It's a Saturnine experience too, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. But the reason that it's an Aquarian experience is insofar as it represents a sort of understanding of our own otherness in the universe, as well as the reality of the other, all things that are very much associated with Aquarius, especially through the rulership of Saturn, at least from an ancient standpoint. So at any rate, the myth of Ganymede is very fitting for Pluto's entrance into Aquarius and for a fascination with higher powers and the way they live and interact with us, although we think that everything's just happening on a mental or physiological or chemical or biological mental level, you know? But this Pluto into Aquarius could make us very aware of the fact that not everything that flows through our minds is ours, and not every energy or impulse that we experience is coming from our own volition. And that in and of itself would be like the recognition of a kind of alien other in our midst. And to me, like, people who are into astrology live with that every day. But you could imagine if, you know, that awareness would grow as something like astrology would become more popular. So anyway, these are all just kind of roaming speculations, and I'm doing this episode a little bit off the cuff, so I apologize because I'm feeling like it's pretty rambly today. But anyway, number two, the past future duality of Aquarius is also a very real thing. So what is that all about? Well, remember that The zodiac is constructed based on the alternation of light and dark in the solar year, from the standpoint, symbolic standpoint, I should add, of the Northern Hemisphere. And so when we get to Aquarius, we're coming through winter. We are on the dark half of the year, which means yin or darkness is dominant in terms of the 24-hour period. There's more darkness than there is light. However, we are on the rising side of the dark half of the year, which means that from Capricorn all the way through Pisces, light is gradually returning from within the darkness of the year, or from within the dominant dark period of the year. Now, that begins in Capricorn, but it is developed and sustained in Aquarius. So what you have in Aquarius is like this sustaining power of light emerging from within darkness. Put that again like this. You have this sort of theme of darkness or light emerging from within darkness. But now what you're feeling during the middle of the winter season on a symbolic level is the gradual emergence and empowering emergence of light from within the darkness. And that can be interpreted a million ways, but in this winter sign, in a sign that was associated with the element of air and with, it was a human sign or a humane sign, it is long been associated with those social, philosophical, religious, political ideologies that will often pit the light against the dark, usually in terms of some kind of future-oriented progress that takes us from ignorance towards enlightenment. So for example, the scientific revolution, the industrial revolution, or scientific enlightenment, sort of industrial revolution, anything that screams progress, progress from some lesser form of technology to a better one, or from a period of ignorance to a better one, from, like political revolutions, like the French American revolutions, these things tend to be sort of Aquarian in the sense that there is a dream of progressing from out of the winter of darkness toward the light. And it's a very entrenched and solid kind of theme. As a Capricorn, it's emergent. It's starting to kickstart that process, but it has a different, almost like temporal quality. If you think about cardinality and all of the signs, there's something about cardinal signs that initiates something, but the full developed power of what has been initiated usually comes in the solid sign that follows. So this solid sign is like, it's very powerful, and it has this idea of like the light overthrowing the dark gradually, but the darkness still reigns. So that usually there's some sense of needing to topple the darkness through revolution. Revolution being the thing that's coming when we hit the spring equinox at the end of the season, and it revolves into the light half of the year. So that's that the idea of revolution comes in this sign. There's a sense of revolution in Pisces too, which I think we'll talk about when we get more into Saturn into Pisces. But when you're looking at Aquarius, again, one of the things that will come up will be a past-future duality. And this can be in any political group. It can be intensely Aquarian. You'll see this in liberal or more conservative people or groups or, you know, ideologies, religiously, politically, whatever. So for example, when I first got into ayahuasca and sort of this, you know, entheogens and interest in like indigenous use of psychedelic plant medicine, there was a phrase that was tossed around a lot called the archaic revival, which means that compared to where we are now, in order to bring greater enlightenment to humanity at large, we should go back to the indigenous wisdom of the past. Okay, it's a very Aquarian thing. It might be about progress, but it's because where we've come is sort of we've fallen down somehow, and we need to get back to the garden, right? So sometimes the progress will actually be depicted as going backward, which is why when it comes to the alien thing, one of the things that you'll be sure to hear will be about ancient alien intelligence that can bring us back to like some kind of Atlantean paradise. Now that's an archetypal fantasy. We don't need to take it literally. And in fact, I would advise you not take it literally, but take it real. I mean, it's real, but take it symbolically as the idea that if there is the presence of some higher powers or forces or gods or celestial beings or something that we have lost touch with, that getting reestablished to what we lost touch with will be one of the ways that, like, the alien fantasy will be spun. Guaranteed. It'll be like archaic alien revival. But on the other hand, and very similarly politically, and none of these are endorsements, by the way, I'm just laying it out there archetypally. Politically, someone who says, look at the state of things, we should make America great again. That's an Aquarian kind of statement, insofar as it says, well, we were at a golden age, right? And we've fallen down, we've regressed somehow. And so we need to get back to a more whole. We've lost touch with our wholeness, which is like the idea of original sin, falling down and coming back to something that we lost. All of those things can be very Aquarian. There's many ways in which Ganymede is also sort of a Christ figure that can fit into that whole story, but I won't go into that because it's kind of a lot to unpack. So the other thing, though, will be the literalness with which we progress in time, often is as futuristic. For example, one of the great myths, and I say myth not as in falsity, but it's as in a fantasy that we live by, which is the progress from error to truth, scientifically or technologically, or, you know, in medicine or physics or whatever, that we progress from error to truth. We evolve, we become more sophisticated from a more primitive past. All of those kinds of dualities are related to the archetypal quality of yang emerging from yin dominance, which tends to look at the ordering of chaos. And the chaos can be something that's present, or it can be something in the past, or it can be a fear that we project into the future. And then when you associate that with groups of people, right, there will often be associated with that, well, we could get back to the time that where everything was great, but we have to get rid of this group of people who's caused the problem, right? And that's where it gets pretty, can get really scary, actually. Or we have to overthrow a government, or there's some tyrannical other, right? And this is where the thing about aliens comes in. You could have two very different ways of looking at aliens under the same fantasy, under the same sort of banner of the Pluto and Aquarius archetype. One will be the aliens will help us get back to the garden, you know, or the aliens will help us progress into a more enlightened future, right? On the other hand, you have the aliens as a hostile or foreign or threatening other, or you have the idea that the aliens would see us that way, right? And all of which would be ultimately looped back into the idea that either the way things are need to be fixed and returned to some golden era, or we are progressing from a relatively dark period toward a better one, but we have to eliminate the humans. Or do you see what I mean? And again, I'm not suggesting you take any of this literally, but think about it symbolically. Because again, now in my, what I'm trying to say is not that these storylines can't be literal, because maybe they could be, but that it's not going to help you. And it's not going to help your ability to stay open and receptive and sort of awake if you sort of decide on which storyline is the real one or which one's going to unfold. Or I don't recommend going down that path, but rather holding the archetype so that you can keep it in your awareness as more stories and events and themes unfold in the next two decades. Finally, the Saturnian nature of Aquarius. Now, I want to show you another picture. Let's see if I can bring it up here. Yeah, here we go. So remember also the place that Saturn held in ancient astrology. Here is a good one. This is a picture of the heavenly spheres with Earth at the center as the realm of incarnate materiality. And then we just above us is the realm of the moon. So just above us is the realm of the moon. You can see Luna right above in the sphere just above us. And if you go up, then there's Mercury and Venus and the Sun and Mars and Jupiter and finally Saturn. Saturn is the most distant sphere of the gods from the standpoint of Earth. So what goes beyond Saturn? Well, the fixed stars And then the realm of the gods, or the realm of the prime mover, or the angelic spheres that lead up to heavenly realms. So it's a kind of hierarchical picture, but it's one of moving from the material world, the incarnate world, into like sort of like ethereal archetypal realms. And the two, of course, remember, it's a hermetic science. So as above, so below. There's a kind of system of correspondences between the worlds. And that's laid out in Platonism and Hermeticism and Neoplatonism and so forth. One of the things you have to remember with Saturn in general, and Aquarius is a Saturn-ruled sign, is that Saturn sits as the watcher at the gateway between the worlds, the realm of the gods filtered down to the human realm of Earth, and the realm beyond, that points to some kind of mystical and numinous higher dimension of consciousness, which is the aim of the philosophical or spiritual life in a sense, but which you have to be able to go, you have to sort of pass through the gateway of Saturn to get to. This is why, for example, Capricorn, the first sign of Saturn, was called the gateway of the gods. It was associated with the death and departure of the soul from the body. And so the winter solstice, the sign of the winter solstice, is associated with the transcendentalizing of the soul toward the heavenly realms. And remember, it has to go beyond Saturn, in a sense, to get there. So Saturn is this interesting planet. It occupies, for example, the seventh sphere of heaven in Dante's Paradiso, where the elevated souls who spend their lives dedicated to prayer and contemplation and study, and often like monastic living, they dwelled in the seventh sphere of heaven that was Saturn's sphere, and they were sort of closest to God. So you also have to, you can't think of Saturn only in terms of like these very modern, mundane terms like limits and restrictions. And Saturn was literally the representative of the limit between this world, or the boundary between this world and the transcendental realm. And so when you're talking about Saturn, you're also talking about a planet that will, whose experiences with this planet will put you in touch with things that, with the sometimes very hard and harsh boundary between the body and the soul, between the limited, temporal, and mortal, and the transcendental, which is why Saturn was also associated with melancholy. And melancholics were those who were most profoundly aware of the division between, you know, spirit and matter, oftentimes sort of tortured by it. But the Saturnian nature of Aquarius also places that Saturnian dimension within the heart of the human experience. It says, you know, Saturn in Aquarius says, you are all bound to live a mortal life, but you should also strive to live, to be something like the gods, or to for life and humanity to resemble something more, something beyond. Well, Saturn brings up the duality between what is limited and what goes beyond the limited. And people always confuse Saturn just for the limit or the limited, but it's not. Saturn was a planet that was a boundary keeper between the two, which is why it was also the planet associated with the opposition and with the tension between opposites. In this case, transcendent versus immanent, body versus spirit. So when you have a Saturn-ruled air sign associated with humanity, one of the things that will do is it will bring up our limits as people, and it will also bring up the striving for ourselves as a social experience to be something more, to be something more. And so naturally, things, when Pluto enters Aquarius, you will see that there will be a very strong emphasis on how can humanity move above and beyond its limits. How can it transcend? And also, what is it limited by? What are its dark spots? Which is why, again, you have this idea of revolution technologically, scientifically. It's about limits, but it's also about the transcendence of limits. And that duality is Saturnine. So just remember those little details about Saturn when you're wondering why we're talking about aliens and whether they're here to, you know, kill us or enlighten us. You know, so anyway, this was a very unplanned talk. It was very spur of the moment. I hope it was cohesive, or like, I thought it was like coherent enough to at least get your wheels spinning. I think this is something that, you know, as stories develop and evolve, we will have the chance to revisit. But at the very least, I hope that this was fun today, and that you'll have some good reasons to meditate a little bit more deeply, rather than only having some kind of, you know, I feel like there's got to be more of a response than just like, okay, cool. So there's the stuff in the news about aliens. So like, let's watch the ancient alien guy, like as soon as possible, you know, or on the other hand, just like freaking out or just completely ignoring it and thinking that it's all crap. There's a place where we can meditate on these things as students or, you know, people interested in astrology that I think is quite nuanced and beautiful. So hopefully this has gotten us started at least. Well, that's it for today. I hope you guys are having a good one. Tell me your thoughts, comments. I would love to hear, you know, on this video and your thoughts about Pluto into Aquarius and some of these stories that have been in the news lately. All right, that's what I've got for today. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.